highways.
There's two questions on the floor from our chairman. And please, you can direct the answers out to the audience in general. And they really dealt with the Buy America Act, the Buy America portion of this thing, as obviously that percentage increases. Does that have any impact in terms of our rail stock, number one? And number two is one of the big issues that faces us here, especially with the Newark port. And I have to believe with the increased capacity of the port when the Bayonne Bridge gets raised and we start getting some of the super liners up here, we have a great problem with truck stacking along the highway 78, Turnpike 95, 80, et cetera, in access to the port. Is there anything within the new act that might provide an opportunity to find ways to alleviate that? So probably look at our FHWA folks for that, but would ever like to answer that fire away. And by the way, those of you in the audience, if you don't ask questions, I will. You don't want that. So.
And I think I just want to set up to everyone. We said this was going to go to 1 o'clock, I believe, but we're going to go to 1:15, so we've got a half hour up for questions.
So let me just sort of try and answer the Buy America. We think that it will have an impact from the FAST Act with the increase of the domestic content that's being required to be part of any federal procurement of rolling stock. It will have an impact on those components that are being produced outside of the U.S., and it will reduce the amount of components that can be produced outside of the U.S. and then assembled in on any vehicle within the U.S. itself. But again, the whole intent is to increase opportunities here in America to see if there's ways that we can have new manufacturing companies come up or be started to help build those particular components itself. And so this is an opportunity, as the administration sees it, to have an impact that way on the American economy. If there are concerns and questions and comments, again, that federal notice of proposed rulemaking is out on the street, or the policy statement is out on the street, you can certainly write in. We ask you to write in, voice your concern, voice your comment, voice your idea, for that matter, on how the proposed rule can be changed or made better. And we will certainly take that into consideration. I think there are some differences, however, between how Buy America is applied among or within USDOT. FRA has a little bit different way of applying it than FTA, which may be a little bit different than FHWA. And unfortunately, you know, USDOT hasn't come together in full on that, but from an FTA perspective, I know there's going to be impact. We see this coming down the pipe.
Yeah. So let me expand my second question, because I'm going to take it from just freight and trucks to overall park and ride, because clearly in this northern section of the state of New Jersey, we have a need for, if we want to truly think about reducing the amount of vehicles on roads, okay, we've got to think about truck parking from a freight perspective and our port system. Secondarily, I would actually think about how do we go back and relook at park and rides and find ways to connect people to mass transit, which clearly should be the direction we're going in. But I don't mean to keep our MPO or MPO folks out of this question, but those were just a couple of quick questions from our chairman. Don't know if you have a response to that at all.
As for the truck queuing on the tollway, I can't speak for Joe. I doubt seriously, and this is just my thoughts, I don't see New Jersey Toll Authority applying for any federal grants. As for the DOT doing something about it, outside of the turnpike, that would rise up through you guys as a priority project, and you could certainly apply for grants, but I would suggest having it in your STIP if it's, you know, that's significant, and go ahead and put it in there. And you know the availability of the CMAQ funds that are coming. I mean, you heard it yesterday. So there is funding for it. It's just a matter of you guys prioritize. When I say you guys, NJTPA, prioritizing that.
Yeah, I guess I would just offer the fast lane grants for those for the freight issues you're facing at the port. is something I would definitely encourage you to consider. I'm actually working on one in Baltimore right now with their toll authority to apply for a fast lane grant to do some things on I-95 in Baltimore. So, you know, I would be surprised if your state DOT or your toll authority has not looked at those fast lane grants, because they will. It starts at $800 million this year, and I think it gets to $1.2 billion next year. There is a cap on the amount of money that can be spent directly for non-highway freight projects. It's capped at $500 million in the aggregate over the 5 years. So it's something to just at least pay attention to. But I think that would be and then obviously the state's getting new freight funding apportioned to it. But again, it's got to be a priority for the state, I would assume, or the toll authority at this point. But you guys need to definitely be involved in that process.
From an FTA perspective, we truly support park and ride. I can't speak to the freight end of it, but our 5307 formula program and other programs will support in the establishment and maintaining of park and ride facilities to transit centers across the country and here within the state of New Jersey. We know that sometimes there can be some challenges in identifying the parcel if it's not already there, to build that park and ride facility to the level that it really needs to be to support that community where that transit center is. But from a funding perspective, you know, our formula program will definitely support it. And I can say that our grantees, New Jersey Transit here in the state of New Jersey, have taken advantage of some of those funds to support park
and ride. You hit about something that's really interesting, which is you have to look at it from the perspective of where do we want to capture people, so that we actually have an impact on a road system, and then getting local municipalities to often say, yeah, that's a good spot, and it's okay for non-residents to be using
it.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic. Exactly. So, all right, so you folks are up now.
And it's a piece of cake with trucks.
Yeah.
It's just easy to find a place to park.
I know, everybody wants that in their backyard. Right?
Questions from all of you. Don't hesitate.
Just a technical question. Are marine highway designated waterways considered part of the intermodal transportation network?
Yes.
One word answer.
They should be part of the NHS. I'll defer, because I know in Alaska, the marine system up there is actually part of the NHS system.
And we have some routes that are, like the ferry down in Cape May Lowe's Ferry, because there's interstate systems on either end. So they made it some years ago. I don't know if you remember the Missing Links effort. They made it part of the National Highway System, because that ferry carries people and goods, or trucks, across the bay.
Are asset management programs covered?
Interesting. Transit asset management, from an FTA perspective, as part of MAP 21, we're requiring that our grantees develop a transit asset management plan for their operations. We haven't come out with our final rule and how we're going to apply that. We have some pilots that we're looking at, but certainly, and I think I did mention in one of the presentation or slide conversation that I had, that yes, we fund transit asset management. All the assets that transit operator has, you know, are for all intent and purposes eligible to receive FTA type assistance. Our concern is that they maintain those assets to a state of good repair, so that the system or the service being provided by that system is safe, reliable, timely, and that kind of a thing. So that's why we have a big effort, a big focus on development of transit asset management plans for all of our grantees across the country. But yes, there, we fund that. We support that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and as far as Federal Highway, it's gone through the rulemaking. We should have a final rule on asset management plans in June. We have a very strong, the DOT itself has a very strong asset management plan right now. They work very closely with the MPOs. It's funny, we talked about this yesterday. So I think we're already where we need to be even before the final rule comes out. They make their the majority of their state of good repair type projects are based on their asset management plan right now. So I think we're already there.
I just would encourage all of the MPOs that will have to be dealing with asset management. It is very important to engage your state DOT, and we...
And transit operators.
I was about to say that. Don't worry. I also say MPO all the time in front of states. But we just did a little snapshot to see if the states are opening up... if they're sharing asset management data and safety data with the MPOs. And the success rate, unfortunately, for Mr. Carr, is that we have a stronger working relationship with the state DOTs. We also need to make sure that there's a lot more continuity within the transit world, because there are a lot of different ways to take a snapshot of the data. And I am very lucky that I've been invited into work with the Transportation Asset Management Work Group that they've got. NCHRP and ASHO are working on that. It's teaching me a lot, but I am finding that the state DOTs have a stronger relationship at this point with sharing the data. And that's something that MPOs really need to have is data and have the right data. So I hope that we can develop stronger relationships, keep those things going, especially as the rules come out and looking ahead to everything that we have to be planning for.
Delana, one of the things we'd be interested in down the road a little bit is any data sharing agreements that other MPOs have with their DOTs and their transit providers. We're working through a lot of that detail in terms of, you know, how we get it and whether we can get it, and then we share it with our subrecipients, and you know, kind of how that works.
That's also part of the conversation. And when we did our little snapshot to kind of see where our members are at this point, and I say snapshot for a reason, we actually asked about the metropolitan planning agreements, and a lot of our members are going, we want to wait until we know what the rules are, what the finals are, before we even look at that, because there's a lot of time and a lot of effort and money involved in doing it. When you start asking the MPOs, have you started having that conversation with your state DOT and with your transit agencies, the conversation has started with the state DOTs a lot more than it has with the transit agencies. Now, you have to keep in mind, the people who are responding to this question, the size could have a lot to do with it. The number of transit agencies could have a lot to do with it. So when we dive a little bit deeper into this subject, once we know what the rules are, we definitely are going to be going to ask a lot more questions. I think, you know, even if you're talking about those MPOs that are 200,000 people or more, you know, it's going to impact some of this dialogue. But hear you loud and clear, Mary. Yep.
I understand the act includes a provision for designation of clean corridors or clean freight corridors, at which alternative fuels will be available, or maybe perhaps future funding will be made available to these corridors. Could you expand on that?
I don't know how much I can expand on it, but it was a priority for Senator Boxer from California to start looking at where it would be appropriate along certain corridors. I don't know if this is a battery thing. To establish those types of corridors for fueling facilities down the road and identify those areas for possible future funding. As you said, I can provide a little bit more detail. It's a provision in the bill that we could get some more information if you want.
Yeah, it's actually in section 1413. It was some of the things.
I actually have the bill in my bag, so yeah. I can beat him. Yeah.
I can read to you the section in law. DOT is to designate national corridors along major highways based on near and long-term need for charging or refueling infrastructure for passenger or commercial vehicles. Aspirational goal of having infrastructure in place by 2021. That's the limit of what's in the law.
Thank you. There was mention made of the ability to offset the cost of proposals made by public-private partnerships. Can you tell us a little bit more about the FAST Act thinking regarding public-private partnerships? What sort of direction, what are they thinking in that regard?
I think with allowing federal aid to be used to pay a stipend for people who don't win the proposal, it appears to me, and MAP 21 I think also did allow that type of funding to be used, but allowing a state DOT or an NPO, whoever is developing this P3, to get these solicitations and get people to put in solicitations, knowing that they're not going to lose money in doing that, I would say it's the biggest thing we've ever done to promote it.
I would add, not to always be contradictory of federal highways, but and that's a definitely a good thing. No, I agree with you 100%. In a very broad, big picture look at this, if you remember, MAP 21, its second year, had $1 billion for the TIFIA program. I think they took it down to 230-something. I mean, they cut it. They whacked it hard. And I think one of the reasons was at the end of MAP 21, the members were, there was a big push on P3s. Let's get the private sector more involved with this, and absolutely, I agree 100%. But there was kind of this agreement that at the end of MAP 21, or when we get around to reauthorizing this, what's the program look like? Is all the money been obligated? Is there a real demand at $1 billion for that kind of, loan guarantees? And I think a reflection was they cut it pretty significantly. So it's still a very important piece of transportation puzzle to get the private sector involved in this. But I think, again, you look at how much Congress took that program down just from a funding level. Maybe it was on the freight element of it. It was a different priority, and maybe that's it. My takeaway on that would be they're not trying to discourage it, but maybe it wasn't as robust as they thought it was back in 2012, 2013.
And I would agree with that. And I think from an FTA perspective, we see P3s as an opportunity to leverage funding to support the development of much needed transportation or transportation infrastructure. Unfortunately, it was slashed the way that it was, but it is still an opportunity to leverage that funding. We haven't encountered in Region 2, this New York, New Jersey area, much P3 activity, to your point, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have some benefit and can help fund some much needed activity. I know there's a big project that's been talked about in this area that may be looking at that kind of funding scenario or other funding scenarios, gateway towns, to help support the funding of those mega kind of projects. So without it, I think transit operators at the very least are challenged, and even with it they are challenged from an FTA perspective, because when you have private interests providing funding into a resource, an asset, and you have public interests, we're saying, okay, who has satisfactory continuing control over that asset? Who's going to do what?
Right.
We want to make sure that that asset is kept up to its proper levels, and so it could be a conflict in that way that may prevent some of the P3 activities from jumping off the wind.
Hi, for Mr. Clark, you mentioned when you're talking about HSIP that behavior modification projects were not eligible. Could you elaborate a little bit on what that project would be and why they aren't eligible?
First of all, let me start by saying they cut the level of funding in the HSIP program. That was another one of the cuts. I didn't mention it, but they reduced the funding for it, as well as not allowing us to use those, and I think we used them up here, some of the campaigns that we did for the bike and pedestrian, mm-hmm. that aren't
eligible for these the FAST Act funding. The prior year funds, if I'm not correct, and we have a balance of HSIP funds, can still be used for that. It's these new apportioned funds that can't. So you may still see that, but once we run out of the old HSIP funds, the MAP 21 funds, it's no longer an eligible activity. It's going to have to be still funded.
There's several of you mentioned handicapped senior citizens and transportation needs and vehicle. Would that include vehicle replacement or additional vehicles for paratransport, dial-a-ride, county? There's a real lack in western New Jersey for transportation to get to medical appointments, mostly for medical,
yes,
and work-related as well for handicapped individuals.
Yes, within FAST Act and even prior to, we provided funding to support our elderly disabled community gain increased mobility to workplaces as well as to the medical appointments that they have. I think the FAST Act also is looking to make sure that we have a good plan in place, and we're merging, have the ability to merge the various types of services, non-for-profit with public, together to provide the best transit alternatives for the senior and disabled communities to those medical appointments themselves. The figure for that program, funding is $2 million in FY16, $3 million in FY17, $3.2 million in FY18, and $3.5 million in FY19 for the Innovative Coordinate Access and Mobility Program.
But you could use FTA funds to buy buses.
Oh, absolutely. You can use
those. I mean, that was part of your question as well,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. You can, and we have always allowed the 50-10 program, 53-10 program, to procure buses, to maintain buses, etc. It is not one of the biggest funded programs within FTA, unfortunately. So that is part of the problems. And many of the recipients who would provide those services are not public bodies that can receive directly the FTA money, so they've had to go through a transit operator like NJT here or through the state, as is done in New York, to receive the monies. And it may present a little challenge as to who the subrecipient is and how they have been selected. But for sure, yes, it can support the acquisition of buses and the maintenance of those facilities, and even support the construction of bus facilities to house.
Thank you. We're down to just a couple more minutes, so we're gonna a little jeopardy here, 60 seconds or less. That's as hard as you try to get me to shut up for 60 seconds. No, I want to start at the end. I want to know, there's a tremendous amount of information that was given here today at all levels. So if you had to sum up greatest asset of this new program and what's missing, can you do it in 60 seconds? I might ask each of you to do it, but would you start on the end?
Yeah, and this is going to be the answer for everybody, probably.
It is, probably.
It's a five-year bill. Right. It increases funding, keeps the Highway Trust Fund solvent for 5 years. And what was the last part?
I'd say for
what's missing out? What's missing from this?
I would add
more money and a longer authorization. The money thing is obviously always going to be an issue. I mean, more federal dollars would be better in this bill for you to make the investments that you need. So I think it's still an underfunded bill, but it's better than what we've had. It's better than inflation.
And I agree with everything that Lev said, but I'll go ahead and add on, since I have worked at AMPO since 2000, we have to have STP funds sub-allocated to the MPOs. We have to have CMAQ funds sub-allocated to the MPOs, and we need more planning funds.
Would definitely agree.
that the prediction or the long-term funding is a plus for us. I think I've mentioned some other features of the FAST Act up front. I think the impact on the Buy America program is going to be significant. Impact on how vehicle procurement and leasing or bus operators is going to be significant. You know, what's missing, I think it hit a lot of good parts. Didn't necessarily fill the gap and fill the void for all of those parts, so I think there could be some additional focus attention, maybe even on the provision of services to the elderly and disabled, ladders of opportunity type efforts, workforce development. I think all of those are ripe for more clear legislation and funding to support those activities nationwide.
The best thing I would have to agree is we finally, because it's been so tough for us, you know, as an agency, we had to go through a hiring freeze, because of lack of GOE. They actually increased our administrative budget so we can start hiring people again. Our office has been cut by four. So it was tough. It's been a tough 7 years, basically. So I'm happy that we finally have something steady. What I don't like about the bill, and I'm just going to be really candid, is one of Federal Highway's core responsibilities is safety, and they reduced safety funding and supplanted it with some of these grant opportunities for free, and I don't personally agree with that.
Thank you. See, we weren't all the same. You guys built upon each other, which is great. We made a target of one and then extended to 115. I think it's important to stay someone on time. I really, number one, I want to thank all of our speakers here without question. Please give them a round of applause.